Welcome to the Real Estate Espresso Podcast, your morning shot of what's new in the world of real estate investing. I'm your host, Victor Menashe. On today's show, we're making a distinction between new supply and value-added opportunities. Investors over the past few years have focused on two different investment theses. Thesis number one is the traditional value-add project. This is where you take an existing project that was built a number of years ago. It's getting tired, and the lack of modern amenities and finishes makes the property less desirable, and therefore it attracts lower rent. The idea is to vacate enough of the units that you can improve them over a period of time. You know, put in new kitchens, add washers and dryers into the units. Improve the common amenities like the pool and the fitness center. You might improve the landscaping and repave the parking. Of course, a fresh coat of paint inside and out will make the entire property look better. When all that's done, the property will be more desirable and therefore should command higher rent in the marketplace. The developer, or in this case the redeveloper, would perform a market analysis on the comparable rents and determine how much more they can charge in rent. All of this assumes, of course, that the existing tenants could afford to pay more in rent, or if not, then you could find enough new tenants who would be willing and able to rent those newly renovated units at the higher rent. In major cities across North America, legions of investors have been scouring the landscape for properties that are candidates for these types of improvements. The net result is an affordability crisis as lower-income tenants get displaced in the process of these value-added projects. When you look at the market in a city, you need to segment the market. There's a luxury rental segment, an affordable segment, a workforce segment, and a B-class segment. All of these need to be examined at a submarket level. Some markets do have a shortage of supply, but not necessarily in every segment. Then we also look at the second type of investor. These are where new developers come in. They're adding new supply. They're adding new product to the market. These gleaming new buildings have modern amenities. They're generally very desirable properties. In order to make them more affordable, some of them are shrinking the apartment sizes to almost eye-wateringly small units. But the key to making the numbers work is to position the product as a higher-end product at the high end of the market. The difference in construction costs between a workforce housing product and a luxury housing product is only a few percentage points. It's mostly concentrated in the finishes. Most of the cost of the building goes into the infrastructure. Heating systems cost exactly the same regardless of the rent being collected. Plumbing is the same, air conditioning is the same, electrical is the same, and so on. Parking is the same. The differences are in the finishes. But these are small compared with the rest, so naturally, it doesn't make sense financially to build a building that's going to collect lower rent. This is why most of the new product coming into the market tends to be an A-class product. Here, too, you want to maximize your rent per square foot for the new construction, and every developer's calculator works the same in that respect. Question is, are there enough new tenants at that price point to fill your new building? In order to answer that question, you're going to perform a thorough market study, look at the comparable properties, as well as the new supply entering the market, and determine whether you'll be able to fill your building or not. That is the traditional approach. It's what most developers do. And naturally, as interest rates have risen, as construction costs have risen, both of these approaches have become a lot more difficult to execute. I know many developers who have put projects on hold because the numbers didn't work any longer. And we, too, have put projects on hold in the current environment. What this approach to development neglects is what the real needs are in the market. Where are the gaps? Is there a business opportunity to fill those gaps? On today's show, I'm going to leave you with a number of questions, and frankly, no answers. But in order to answer questions, you need to start by asking better questions. Answering a poor question doesn't help further your cause. So there is a huge global migration of population, and we see that as a result of all kinds of global issues, whether it's conflict or economic, many, many factors at play. We see people pouring over the southern border in the United States. Many are coming from South America. We have hundreds of thousands entering Canada seeking asylum from conflict areas in Africa that are not even making news headlines. These people need a place to live as well. There's new manufacturing facilities being built all over North America, some in Canada, some in Mexico, and some domestically in the U.S. New transportation networks and new distribution networks are being built to handle these new supply chains. So what does this new manufacturing and distribution capacity, what do they require? And I know what you're thinking. Asylum seekers who have just come here with no money in their pocket, yeah, they may need a place to live, but they're broke. How are they going to afford to rent your brand new apartment? But rather than taking a supply-side approach to development and redevelopment, which is again what most housing suppliers do, consider taking a demand-side approach to identify the gaps. I think you'll be surprised at the opportunities that that uncovers. As you think about that, have an awesome rest of your day. Go make some great things happen, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.